Hi, my name is Roy Collin, and welcome to the show. I've also got Fight Podcast, The Awakening Podcast, Exposing Fraud and Corruption, but with Solutions, the Crypto Podcast, talking about all things blockchain, NFTs, crypto, the Meditation Podcast, talking about all different types of meditation, but there's also meditations there from 1 minute to 2 hours. And the other one's the Learn Polish Podcast. So if you're interested in learning Polish, you can do that. And the other one is Speaking with Roy Collin. And I just have guests from around the world talking about either public speaking or also about their book or just general life in general. And you find everything on bio.link/podcaster. I'm also a podcasting coach. And you see the QR code there. And it's also on my link as well. And if you're interested in actually going on some podcast shows, I'm helping people doing that. Or if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com. He helps people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. So be sure to check him out, danielpacker.com. I hope you enjoy this week's show. Welcome to the Meditation Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on meditationpodcast.org. My guest today. Now, are you going to become a mindfulness ninja? You will find out. Therapist, speaker, but she's also the author of this wonderful book, Therapeutic Mindfulness. Please welcome Ruth Fairnow. And I love your surname because it's like what a lot of people have. They have Fairnow, and you're going to help them with that.
That's a great way to put it. Some people are disturbed when they hear my name, but I'm like, maybe it's feel your fear now, right? So you can feel better later. Let's work through it. Fear right now. Let's do it.
Excellent. So I've just touched on bullet points, but you might just kind of let the listeners know a little bit about yourself.
Oh gosh. I'm a trauma therapist. I'm EMDR certified. That is an internationally recognized trauma therapy that helps for people with PTSD and really anything that's stuck, that's not logical, but like deeply emotional and doesn't fit. Those things can be healed with EMDR. And between becoming a trauma therapist, well, when I did that, I was already meditating for over a decade. I had done some studying of Eastern meditation. I started that in China, which that's a whole other thing. I was in China. And then years later, I become a therapist and I started seeing a lot of things. I started seeing that people can use mindfulness techniques like meditation or visualization to actually avoid and suppress, push down negative emotions. And the irony is that mindfulness is not judgmental. And so the moment you're pushing a feeling away, you're judging it as being bad. So after doing all the, meditation, mindfulness, trauma therapy, and then I saw this, I realized that you can actually use a meditation directly to heal the feeling. And this process came together. It's step by step. You don't have to have a deeply trained mind to use it, but you can heal emotions with it. And that's how therapeutic mindfulness was born and my background.
Brilliant. So you might tell me about your journey in China, because I know you've done Kung Fu. I did Kung Fu when I was younger. I did it for about 8 years, 6 years. When I was about
Oh.
16, loved it. And I did you did Qigong as well. I just got 10 lessons at that, but I felt the energy. The guy was actually very good. And unfortunately, it was just kind of a passing class that I'd done. But I mean, you've obviously done a lot of it. So when did it start? What age were you? How did you manage to be in China?
Well, I was learning an American martial arts when I was 20. I was into that stuff. And then at 25, a friend of mine said, talk to me about he's gonna go to Shaolin to study Kung Fu. And I'm like, whoa, that sounds cool. I'd love to go. You wanna go? Yeah, let's go. So we went and it was immersive. So in Shaolin, there were in 2001, anyway, a whole bunch of schools. So you have the Shaolin Temple, that is the super famous one, and all the movies are based in Shaolin. But the whole school is like a school of martial, or sorry, the whole city is a city of martial arts schools. And mine was just up the mountain a little bit. We're at the base of the Himalayas. And that master had a few schools, but he was having Westerners come in and we would train for hours a day, and then we would take a day off and walk up a mountain and come back and train some more. So we did that. And then he also would give Qigong instruction through a translator. And in my spare time, we had no running water, no electricity, no attachment to the outer world. And I would spend a lot of time like really getting serious about how to meditate. I would read about meditation. I would spend long periods of time trying to do it and figure it out. And that's where it began for me.
And what kind of meditations did you try and what did you find worked best for you?
Well, it's interesting because I was reading, as I said, Eastern style books, and meditation is not pretending to be at the beach and doing all the senses. That's visualization, right? And I went there later, but this started with this non-attachment idea of let's watch the thoughts go by and just observe. And it wasn't completely emptying the mind, although I think you want the mind to get more and more empty. So I was doing a lot of practice of that kind of things, just whatever I would read in the book, I would spend time trying to see if I could do it. And I got to tell you, it's hard. I was there, I was learning from the master, I'm reading these books, I have lots of spare time to do it, doesn't mean I felt like I was any good at it, but I did it a lot. And then when I came back, I started playing around with other things. I learned from some of my readings that people do these like healing meditations that they're really a guided visualization. And I did a lot of those, and those ended up translating into my therapy work. In the beginning, as a therapist, I would do some cognitive behavioral therapy, but whenever a thought or a shift in thinking was helpful to someone and I could see it, then I would use that and guide them in a visualization to try to help that go deeper into their knowing, into their experience, sometimes into their body. So I did that. Later years, I ended up exploring a spiritual path, a self-study path, and there was an extensive contemplative meditation. So I've done a lot of it. I've done grounding, mindfulness in the moment outside of therapy. I've done traditional meditation, mindfulness meditation, visualization, contemplation. So a lot of the tools, when I talk about mindfulness tools, all those are under the list, all of those things. So I've explored a lot. And I found that some things help different people. Some things make it harder for different people. People with more scattered brains and ADHD might need a little bit more for focus, like music or a candle or the ohms. There's a lot of different tools and ways to do it, but there are some fundamentals that make it mindful. And the fundamentals of mindfulness are two parts, that is non-judgment and focus attention. So mindfulness in any form is non-judgmental focused attention. We use that in therapeutic mindfulness, but we also use that in any of these other tools.
Excellent. So one of the things that kind of, I suppose, frustrates me, a lot of the therapists, they have a patient for life and they're talking about just everything is in the head. And they kind of, so you might put that one to rest.
My goal is to put myself out of a job, which doesn't work because then everyone hears about it and they all want to come to you. But I'm telling you, every single time a client graduates, they don't really need me anymore. I run to my partner and I tell him like, hey, I had a client, they're doing well, they're good, they don't need me, they've gone off on their own, and I'm excited. Yes, I do not want clients for life. I want them to be better than that. And mind you, I think we're growing for life. And there are certain things, I have a skill set that makes me useful for going through certain hard things. So clients will come back sometimes when they're going through something big for just a little bit of help, and then they'll move on. But the day in, day out ability to process life being hard or process whatever emotions come up, that can be done. Therapeutic mindfulness is a huge tool for that. And I really do think it's the number one reason why people don't need me anymore for that day in, day out stuff. Once I developed this and started teaching it to my clients, I had a lot more people finishing therapy happily. And that was super exciting to me. I think that was the cue of like, maybe I need to teach this.
So I know you touched in your book, a lot of people say, oh, time heals all wounds, but that's not true either, is it?
Sorry, that just makes me, I write about that in the book. I'm like, yeah, no. There's a wonderful song. It's got the best opening line. Okay. So this might be first time on a podcast, but I'm going to sing. You might have heard this. Time ain't never healed a thing. Yeah, nothing. I have people that will come to me and say, my grandfather or my mother or somebody died 14 years ago, and I'm still not over it. And I can see that this person avoids feeling anything. And I'm thinking of more than one person right now. And I'm thinking, why would you be over it? You've never felt it. And to be fair, they don't know how to, but time heals nothing. One thing I make very, very clear in the book is that whatever pain you push down, it will wait. And it will insist on being heard. And the more you push stuff down, like if you keep pushing and pushing and shoving everything down where you can't look at it directly, then it blows up sideways. Like if you shove down a box and it explodes, that's what happens to your emotions. And I'll tell you what it looks like. When emotions explode out sideways, that's nightmares, panic attacks, rage attacks, unexplained emotions. That's what happens. Time heals nothing. It's what we do in time that heals.
So I know you also talk, and I think a lot of people would experience this with their children when you were younger, belly aches for school.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was one of those people. My story is... It's in the book. It's like you're bringing up everything. It's in the book. My story's in the book. Yeah. They say what you suppress, your body expresses. And kids don't know how to express stuff a lot. And so it comes out in their body. And tummy aches was the thing. There's a story that I write down in there. I must have been 8. And I went to my mom. I'm sick. I don't want to go to school. And she says, what are your symptoms? I'm like, well, my tummy hurts. And that had always worked before. My tummy hurt. I don't go to school, but I'm getting older. And she's like, what else? And I'm like, my tummy hurts. And she's like, you got to go to school. And so I'm upset. And I can feel my tummy aching. And I see when the school bus starts coming, my tummy really started hurting bad. And I'm crying and crying. And she comes out and sees me and she's like, okay, you can stay home. And then she goes back to bed. And I'm relieved that I don't have to go to school feeling so terrible, except I didn't feel so terrible. It stopped. I mean, it went back to like a low level, but that really big hurt stopped. And even at 8 years old, I'm like, wait a minute. That's weird. That doesn't make sense. I wasn't faking anything. It hurt and I felt terrible. And the moment I was home free, it went right back down to just being really mild. And I realized my body had fooled me and I was determined never to let it fool me again. So I never stayed home with a tummy ache again, but that was the first time I became aware about emotions in our body.
And I think, like, parents should pay attention to something like that, because sometimes there's a lot of bullying going on and they're threatened not to say anything. And sometimes the teachers, unfortunately, just let it go on. They don't intervene and nip it in the bud. So you should kind of pay attention when you see something like that, because there could be something deeper that's really going on that's bringing on this. And as you say, like, the pain is there, you feel it, but the reality is it's because of something else that's causing it.
Yeah, I hate to tell you, but the only time I felt the tummy ache again was seventh grade. And there was a situation with some people that were being very mean. And I was determined not to run from it and let my body make my decisions for me. So instead, I started fighting. I was a fighter in middle school because of that. So there you go. There's a secret about me. I used to fight these two people that were... that used to bully some people.
Very good.
You go.
You, like, I'm not going to give away everything in the book, because you have a beautiful writing style. It's one of these books that you just enjoy reading. Not everybody has that ability, and I like it. But you talk about, and I think it's nice because a lot of people could relate to it as well. in the lake, the woman in the lake. She's gone out to the lake with the oar. She's halfway out.
Remind me.
So basically, she's going out halfway out, and then
my story about the canoe. Okay, that came from the idea of it's not an actual story. It's a story I made up about like what would happen if we don't admit that we're feeling bad. What do? We think that we can deny our feelings and be okay. And that's this time heals all wounds. It will go away. Which, by the way, not only does it come out sideways, but if you can't look at directly at the thing that hurts you, later in life, something else comes along that feels like that. And basically you keep feeling the same thing over and over again in different ways until you deal with it. And so the mind has such a strong, powerful tendency to not feel, to deny what's going on with us. We don't want to feel bad. Emotions are like a stove. You touch it, your hand jerks back, you know, hot stove. So we don't want to feel it. And our mind has so many tricks. It actually tricks us to not recognizing, and we need to learn the tricks. But this story about the woman in the lake is my pitch, my explanation for why we need to do that. If you don't admit what's upsetting you all the way, if you don't let the feeling come up all the way, you can't heal it. You can't do anything about it. So here's my story of denial. So say a woman is in a canoe and she's going across a lake, and halfway through the lake, she says, "This is junk. I should be at the other side already. I can't believe I'm only halfway through. This is ridiculous." And she throws a fit and she gets angry and she starts like hitting the water with an oar and yelling and just, "Oh, why am I here? This shouldn't be. I can't believe that I'm not there yet. I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be here." And she wears herself out with her anger. So then she takes a nap. And she's like, "I'll just take a nap." This is avoidance, right? "I'm just going to take a nap. I'm not going to worry about it." Wears herself out, takes a nap. And then she wakes up and she's still in the middle of the lake. How is it not healed already? I mean, how is she not on the other side already, right? And so then she blames everyone. She blames the canoe, the water, the currents, the gods, the skies, the wind, all that energy trying to not have the fact that she's in the middle of the lake. Could have just been used to finish rowing, right? And that is, I think, a metaphor for our emotions. There's so much fear around feeling it that there's all this avoidance and we're just raging against the fact that we have the emotion. And if we can learn how to just be with it, in the beginning, doing this process, I'm not going to lie, for some people, brings up a lot of fear. It's very, very uncomfortable, and it will always be uncomfortable. But your belief, your understanding about how quickly the emotions can go away, start to give you confidence, and you stop feeling the need to avoid as much. When avoiding means diving into a pit of despair for 3 days until you have to go to work and just shove it down again. And you find out you can do this for 30 minutes and be perfectly okay and have a great weekend. And I'm actually referring to a specific client that had that experience. It was, you know, all night crying on the bathroom floor, all Sunday in the bed, until she has to adult again Monday. And then the next time the same thing happened, she tried this and it was 30 minutes and she had a good weekend. That's the difference. So when you start to learn how easy it is to just row across the lake, the resistance doesn't feel as necessary anymore. That's why people don't need me as much after they learn this.
I think, I don't know what age was, I was like 23 or 24. And I had a thing called, what I was told, sciatica, pain down my leg. And at the time, I was working from 8 in the morning to 12 at night, turning at the deep end. When I started working for a company, I was kind of like doing drawings for the first job, next job, running a job for about $1 million, and the next one, running a job for $5 million. At that age, they shouldn't have done it. But I was basically doing very well and making a load of money in it. But my body was acting out from the stress from it. And I was trying everything. I tried physiotherapy, acupuncture, chiropractor. I was trying the whole lot. And then they told me I had to get an epidural. I did that. And that ended up giving me pains down the other leg because they put you to sleep as well. And then I got an operation. They said my disc is prolapsed and I was expecting to be sorted. And I was the exact same. And I was really at my wit's end now at this stage. Because like I was on the ground, I was in pain. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything. And in the end, it was a book, Healing Back Pain by Dr. John Sarno. And I sorted myself out. And I say the amount of people that have ailments, and I know even people can bring on cancers and everything because of stress that...
Yeah.
And then they go to get it fixed, whether it's the rash on the hand, they're going for the magic pill or the magic cream. And the reality, that's not the solution.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I mean, we may need some of the modern medical stuff to get us through. But in the end, you know, I absolutely agree. What we say, you know, what your mind suppresses, your body expresses is very literal. Ulcers, high blood pressure are the real easy ones that we know about. It's very true. And I can tell you when I'm doing this work, we hear, at least, you know, in my country, we hear mind-body connection. That's all the rage, mind-body connection. And then I'm in a session with somebody and when they have a mind-body connection, they're very surprised. But when I'm working with people, they will have very strong sometimes physical sensations. I had a woman I was doing work on, and she had anger at, you know, a parent. And every time that came up, she got pain on her shoulders. The first time it happened, her shoulders were sore for 4 days after therapy. So, and every time we brought it up, they would go right into both shoulders, but it would be less sore until it wasn't there anymore. But your body can tense up so much that you're in pain or that your joints hurt or that you're inflamed. Mind-body connection is very real. I have another client that when we go into the body, his cheeks get hot. And then his face gets hot. That's his early sign. When his cheeks get hot, he knows he's upset. But he didn't realize it at the beginning. At the beginning, we'd be in session. I'd have him go to his body. What do you feel? Where is it in your body? And he would say, I'm hot. I'm hot, but it's probably just a sweater. I'm wearing this big sweater. I said, oh, were you hot when we started the session? He says, no. Okay, notice being hot. And we would go through it. And then the hot would go away. And that happened a few times where he started to realize when I'm upset, I get hot and I feel it in my cheeks first. So it's very, very real. People get upset stomach and actual ulcers. People get actual sensations. And it's very surprising when they do. People get stomach aches and headaches in the middle of session and they're gone 5-10 minutes later. And that happens a lot.
Which... Like you did at the trauma therapist certified in EMDR, that's for PTSD. Is that something that you've kind of incorporated or is it something that you studied and then you realize later your own kind of methods were kind of better?
I use EMDR all the time. My two favorite overall, anything that I've ever done in therapy, my two favorite things are EMDR, therapeutic mindfulness. Those are like twin magic. The closest thing you can get to a magic pill is those. They're not magic. They're hard work, but those are the best of anything that I've seen personally. So EMDR is fantastic. EMDR is something that I don't recommend people do on their own. You know, if they start to learn the process with me, you know, I don't say, okay, you have a lot of trauma, go home and do this on yourself. It's really powerful. It can bring up intense emotions. Your mind can wander to really dark places. Sometimes I've been doing work with people for a while, and as the protections inside their mind wear away, EMDR has at times brought up suppressed memories that were very traumatic for someone to hear. So EMDR is something that you do with somebody. Therapeutic mindfulness is also powerful, but it's a bit gentler as well. It's not going to rip open a memory, or I haven't seen that, and I don't think it would be as shocking. It's a little bit more of a gentle method, and it is something that people can do on their own most of the time. I talk about, there is a warning, you know, a few caveats. If people feel some emotions and find that they start to get spacey and feel like they're not themselves, or they're seeing their body from the outside, or they block out periods of time, that level, that kind of reaction where you feel like you're not yourself, outside yourself, or you lose time, those people should only be working with somebody until they're able to tolerate more. But if you're a person that can tolerate some emotion, you can do this on your own. And so that's probably the biggest difference. There's one other difference. EMDR can be done a few different ways, but it's more open, and there's an allowing of the mind to explore memories that are related to a hurt feeling or a core belief. Like if you believe I'm going to be rejected, you know, there might be a bunch of memories like that. And EMDR will look at different memories and work through memories that go with that. Therapeutic mindfulness purposefully focuses in on the body. And the reason for that has to do with how we deal with emotions. So by default, your mind has two ways that it likes to deal with emotions. The first one we've talked about, the avoidance, that's swallowing it down. We're going to swallow everything we have, shove it down, avoid it. We're going to get busy. We're going to become a workaholic, an alcoholic, a sexaholic. We're going to get successful, or we're going to solve everyone else's problems, or we're going to watch Netflix any moment we're not busy. All these ways to shove it down. We can swallow emotions, but we have heard that we need to face stuff. So, okay, let's face our emotions. By default, the other way your mind tries to deal with things, if you have swallow, take off the S, we like to wallow, right? So the moment you try to face your stuff, your brain starts talking and analyzing. Why is this happening? Why am I like this? Where did this come from? How is it like? And we try to figure out why, because we believe if we can figure out why, we don't have to feel. Okay. But the problem is that wallowing doesn't heal emotions, and it tends to be very much in your head. So we like analyzing, it's safe. But the thing is, if you could fix it with your logic, well, I wouldn't have this book. Let's just put it that way. You can't fix it with logic. But when you are in your head wallowing, this is a part of your brain that feeds the emotion. So if I am afraid of something, if I'm fearful, and I try to understand why I'm fearful and I start wallowing, my brain will give me a story about, well, this could happen. That could happen. That could happen. Remember that one thing that happened? It could be a lot worse. Let me tell you all the ways. And it's just going to add. It's like, if your emotion is a fire, your brain puts logs, your thoughts are logs that go on the fire. So the longer you wallow, you may notice that you feel worse and worse and worse. So swallowing doesn't work. Wallowing doesn't work. And at this point, I could see someone being really frustrating, saying, okay, so I can't avoid the feelings. I can't face the feelings. What's left? What am I going to do? And there is an answer. So instead of swallowing or wallowing, you can allow them, but you can't do it in your head. If you've got that, you know, monkey mind that jumps all over the place and tries to get you upset. I think that's the issue with most people that don't have like heavy meditation training and all that. They can't observe the thoughts without getting involved. And so if you're believing all these thoughts and they're just winding you up, you're going to feel worse and worse. But if you can get to your body, then you can allow the sensation in your body. Remember, your body expresses your emotion. Where do you feel emotion? Is it heavy in your chest? Is it tight in your shoulders? Is it squeezing in your neck? Is it churning in your stomach? Is it hot? You know, so our emotions are shown, they're expressed, they are in our body. Therapeutic mindfulness teaches us how to get out of the story, out of the thoughts, into the body. And once you're in the body, you can heal it. That's when you start allowing it and you come to it without any judgment. And when you are fully present with what's hurting you and you don't have any judgment and you just allow it to show up, it starts to change and shift and it heals. And that's the power of therapeutic mindfulness.
Excellent. And when you're working with clients, do both the modalities that you use work online as well, or is it better to be in person? Because I remember you talking about somebody that they weren't yawning and then yawning when you touched on a certain subject. But I also know, because I pay attention to everything, even when I was like working in Toastmasters, just in Toastmasters, I could see a person's feet even kind of twitching and I'd spot everything. Whereas on camera, you're not going to see a lot of stuff. So I just kind of do both work remotely.
Both absolutely work. I have been doing remote therapy only since 2020. I have not done in person. There's a lot of things that I like about in person, but it's not necessary. I've done a college class online and I demonstrated with a student in front of everybody with all the Zoom watching. I can usually see a number of things, but if I don't see every cue of their body, the process can still work. They can do it alone. So yeah.
Plus you pay attention to the voice as well. Like, you know what the difference in the tone when something is kind of touching them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see some things, but also, I'll talk and interact and just see where things are going. So I don't think it's necessary. Well, actually, I know for a fact it's not necessary to do in person. I have people doing a lot of healing on camera. So I like both ways. I prefer workshops in person because I can interact with the whole group as well as the person that I'm working with. But like I said, I've taught a group online too. So it all works.
So I think this will affect a lot of people as well. How do you apply kind of self-compassion?
Oh, that's my favorite. Okay. My favorite chapter in a book is the self-compassion chapter. That I think, at least in American pop psychology, self-compassion is the buzzword, right? And you've got all these books and you got the researcher, Kristen Neff, who's awesome. And there's just all this stuff about self-compassion and people are like, oh, you should be kind to yourself, but how? Like, people try to give themselves nice affirmations, but after they've messed up or when they're in the middle of being upset with themselves, that's when their brain just starts tearing them apart and telling them, what I like to say is, here's all the reasons why I suck, right? And that's what the story is a lot of times. Here's a reason why I'm a victim. And then, oh, but I'm a victim because no one likes me, because I'm defective. And clearly I'm going to be alone forever. Just like this, when you're in the middle of that, it's hard to have self-compassion. And actually, one of the things that cause the most trouble, the reason why EMDR is not good to do at home, for example, is because whenever guilt and shame come in, the judgment against yourself will block your efforts to heal. So judgment blocks healing, but only 100% of the time, right? If it's there, it will block. But if you can drop the judgment, there's the option to heal. Self-compassion facilitates healing. So that's one reason why this is such a good self-help version of therapy, because if I'm feeling shame, actually, I've got that example for you if you like, because it has to do with shame. But if I'm feeling shame and we're trying to do therapy on it, no matter what I tell you, I can tell that you had good intentions, or look, you have a good heart, and you're like, yes, but, and your brain will tell you the reasons why you should still feel shame. But if you get into your body on shame, and the shame is like a gooey purple blob in your stomach, and it's heavy and it weighs you down and it feels so gross and disgusting, and we look at the blob, okay, so that blob is showing up. This is a part of you that is hurt. Can you be with it? Can you open up to it? And it's hard to feel shameful about weird purple goo. You know, people are like, why does it feel like weird purple goo? Or why does it feel like a brick in my chest or something? It's not shameful. It's just weird, And so it's hard to hold on to the shame story. So let's just stick with the brick in my chest. So if you have that, it's not shameful, but then you start noticing it. And self-compassion is a wonderful thing, but there are some people that are not in a place where they can be kind, even to the feeling of heaviness and tightness in a chest. They can't be kind to that because that's too much. So I start with non-judgment. Just let it be there. Let the feeling be there. There's a brick in your chest. Let it be there. Okay, let it be heavy. Let it be rough. Let it be hard. Let it be, if it's hot or cold, let it be hot, and give it space. And the brick starts to maybe get a little worse, and like, let it be there. And then it starts to change and the corners get softer and it starts to lighten up and it starts to spread out and dissipate until it's gone. That's the kind of thing that happens. And after a while, in the beginning, I think we have a tendency to judge ourselves for having feelings, right? Once I turned 18 years old, I should have been logical and sensible and do everything right because I'm grown now. I shouldn't have stupid feelings. I shouldn't have illogical reactions because I'm grown. And we really beat ourselves up for it. So when you have this feeling and you sit with it and you're just not judging, you're just watching it and it goes away. And afterwards you feel calm and peaceful and you start doing that. It becomes easier for people not to judge themselves for having feelings when they start to be able to watch the feelings and then watch them go away and start to realize that the feelings, there's a way to deal with them. And so even people that struggle with self-compassion, after they are doing this for a while, if I feel angry and I think I'm a bad person because I feel angry, and then I can sit with the anger in my body and 20 minutes later, I feel calm and peaceful and I can feel kind toward those people. I don't hate myself as much. I start to realize this is just a hurt part of me I need to fix. And self-compassion develops from doing this work. Although I do have a chapter at the end called Advanced Mindfulness, and I use like a couple, you know, ninja tools right there to really up your game. So if you're able to see yourself with compassion and you're dealing with something, then instead, so when I'm doing the process, I give people non-judgmental phrases about the feelings in their body. So let it be there. Just notice, give it space. It's just a hurt part of you. Just stay with it. Allow it to do whatever it needs. So these are the phrases so we can allow that feeling to do what it needs. But if you can give yourself some compassion and that feels good for you, then you can talk directly to the feeling. Instead of saying, allow it to be there, you say, you can be here. I see you. You're not alone. I'm with you. I care about the hurt. And talking directly with the hurt experience in our body is really powerful. And that, if this is a practice that someone is doing regularly, then you could be in the middle of a work day and have a strong reaction. And part of you says, I can see that part of me is hurt right now. And that compassionate voice starts to become a habit. Because you know that if you heal what's hurt, then the kind you that's inside comes out. And so you don't hate yourself for being angry. You just go and nurture that part and then you're all better. It's such a cool process to see people who practice this in their lives and how much they grow, you know, in therapy. I may be helping them with big stuff, but they're doing this work in between. And the changes I'm describing are not theoretical. I've seen them with people. I've seen all this happen and it's very inspiring to me.
So just finally, because we mentioned at the start, you know, the therapist, some of them, you know, patient for life. Because I've heard somebody say, oh, my therapist is brilliant. I'm with them 10 years. And I think, yeah, they're a brilliant business person to make you be a client for 10 years. So has there been, either give me an example of somebody that has perhaps been guided in the wrong way, that somebody was just kind of getting them to relive the story? Because I think that seems to be the thing as well. They just get them to relive the story. Then they feel relieved and they come back again next week. Are a kind of common thing that you've seen that people have cured? You might just kind of finish on something like that.
Yeah, that goes back to the whole idea of judgment blocks healing and self-compassion nurtures healing. It facilitates healing. So I have had people, you know, when I was younger as a therapist or newer as a therapist, I had a woman that was with me for a year and a half, and I think she got better by 0%. And I'm like, what is happening here? You know, I do this for other people. I do the same thing and it seems to help. And then this one woman, I can't tell if anything's better, but she keeps coming back because it's comfortable, but nothing happens. And that's, as I watched her and as I watched people that get better and people that don't get better, I start to see that judgment. I can see how, you know, I can see good things about them all day long for a year and a half. And if they believe none of it and don't internalize it, then they're going to be stuck because that judgment will get them stuck And they'll start having beliefs like, well, I go to that therapist, she's really nice. I'm not being nice. I'm being sincere. I can actually see something. Or I must be nice, but I must be naive, because if I really knew how they were, then I wouldn't see them decently. And so I think a big thing about going from many, many, many years to, you know, what actually helps you heal, or if people that have gone astray, I mean, every therapist, you know, there's going to be different skill sets, and there's going to be people that match and people that don't match. But I think for the majority of people that can function in life, it really is about healing the core, the source of it. And that's the emotion. If I'm in a situation that's upsetting, you know, I may or may not need to fix the situation, who knows, but regardless, I need to fix what's deeper. So we have to go deeper than just logic. You know, I think you can get the people that are in, actually, I have a client that was in therapy before me for 40 years. 40 years, 40. That's right. And I've been seeing him for 8, which is the longest of any of my clients. And he, and I got to tell you, the pattern or the habit of avoiding and suppressing was so intense. That's the one that would yawn, had no clue when feelings came up, had no clue that he couldn't breathe. You know, I could teach someone a breathing technique, breathe deeply, and show them breathing out slowly. He's like, and I'm like, no, like this. And he goes, okay. Like, he didn't know how to breathe. He didn't know when he had feelings. It was crazy. So we had to work through all that. And this year, and every now and again, I would push him to become more independent and try to work. If you're not ready to become independent, we need to look at the fear about that and the dependency. This year, he actually suggested we go every other week and maybe check that out and maybe go down to once a month. He has never suggested that before. He's always been really dependent. And I was shocked. I'm like, oh my gosh, my baby's growing up. The birdie's leaving the nest. And that's a beautiful thing to me.
Well, listen, I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. I love what you're doing, because I think there's a lot of pain in the world. And the more people that are helping, the better, because it doesn't just affect the one person that you help. It's all those in their circle as well, whether they're children, family members, the whole lot. So there's a big ripple effect. So you might let people know how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, I am at ruthfearnow.com. Fearnow is spelled like it sounds, F-E-A-R-N-O-W. Ruthfearnow.com. I have a link to the book. I have a link to podcasts. I also have free downloads of whatever's in the appendix that's directly related to the process. Those are downloadable for free. And then and if you want me to speak or teach this or demonstrate it for a group, get in contact with me on that website.
Perfect. Yeah, I'll make sure I'll put the links both in the audio and the video. And just for those, that's the book. So you can see it when you actually go to get it. And if you do, make sure you give her a 5-star rating and a review, because it really helps in the algorithms in Amazon or Barnes & Noble, wherever you get it. So that's all for this week. You find all the episodes on the meditationpodcast.org. Take care. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and share with your friends. And you'll find all my shows with the QR code or bio.link/podcaster, as well as my podcast coaching. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com, helping people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. Also, if you'd like to go on a podcasting tour, I can help you do that. And if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me on my bio.link/podcaster. Until next week, take care.